Hi, I'm Phil, and I'm a compulsive overeater calling in from New York City this evening. I'm originally from Buffalo, and I'll just go into a little bit of what it was like before and what it's like now. And I'm a 36-year-old guy, released about 120, 130 pounds, something like that. It's been off for about 5 years, with the grace of God, one day at a time. And for today, I am abstinent right now, and I'm grateful to be with all of you this evening. So, growing up, I was born in the late 80s, and my parents didn't cook. Everything was burnt. And as a kid, I grew up basically on fast food and the traditional American diet. And I was always the fattest kid in any group I was ever with. And I remember as
Could you
early,
talk a little louder?
oh, sure, I will do so. So as a kid, I remember, just lots of fast food. And I was also an only child, so there was a lot of boredom, I would say. And I became a boredom eater, and the refrigerator became my higher power. And over time, I put on weight. And I was the biggest kid in my class through pre-K, kindergarten, all the way into first grade, second grade. And I remember by the time I was in third grade, I was already in adult-sized clothing. And, going on a little bit further, I remember that I got a dog for my 8th birthday, and he would greet everyone at the door but me. He would always go running for his food dish when I was a kid, and if that didn't tell me I was a compulsive overeater, I don't know what did. But I can also remember major binges as a kid, and I'm talking enormous, like 10, 20,000 calories in a single sitting worth of different food groups. And it wasn't always just one food group, it was multiple food groups. And I ruined certain types of food for myself as a kid. And even to this day, and I got back from a meeting near Times Square about 2 hours ago. I was talking with a few fellows there this evening too about some of these binges, saying, to this day, if I smell these foods, they make me nauseous. But that just meant that my disease grew and found other foods to binge on. So then I got into high school and I had my first seizure, and my doctor said, "You need to give up this other substance I was drinking." So then I said, "Fine, I'll give up the soda." And I put that down for a year just to pick it back up again. And it always seemed like whenever I put something down, I would pick it back up again unless I was completely nauseous. So I ruined so many things for myself in terms of food and beverages. It's kind of sad looking back, but I can feel that emotion today, which I'm grateful for. And then I got up to college, and I was 400 pounds, and I remember that I would try to walk across my dorm room, and I was out of breath just walking across the room. And I can't tell you how many chairs I broke. I would break chairs in the lecture halls. I'd sit in the front of the room because it was hard for me to hear and see. So when I sat in the front of the room, that just added to the embarrassment when I would eventually break the chair. And, I remember that my best defense mechanism was to just laugh with everyone else because what could I do? And I was sick and suffering. And, in my first year of college, I remember near the end of that semester, I decided, you know what, I need to get my weight under control. So I took a course in the nutrition sciences, and I'm an engineering major. I learned how to eat properly. That got me all the way down to 250 pounds before I said, oh, I've lost all this weight. I can have it again, no problem. I'll have this food. I just won't overindulge, and we'll be back. Oh boy, that was a fun U curve, as I call it. But basically, I went from 400 to 250 back to almost 400 in no time. And, it's really, as the program puts it, self-will run riot for me. But what I did learn during that period is I love walking, and that's something that I always kept up. Although then I would move to New York City from Buffalo in 2012, 2011, sometime in there. And I kept up the walking, but New Yorkers move really fast, and I couldn't move that fast, you know, at 370 or so when I was walking down the street. So, you know, big guy coming down the street, people would dodge out of my way, I remember. And, you know, that was kind of my ego playing there. You know, looking back at it, that was ego. Like, I'm a big guy, they're going to get out of my way, it's my world. And the program taught me that I was self-centered, I was selfish, you know, and everything was about me. So that kind of fits this egotistic maniac that I was. So, you know, I realized, though, that I need to get the weight under control. And, you know, I would spend the next probably 5 years from 2011 going up and down, up and down, and, you know, basically hovering somewhere around 340, 350. You know, at periods of not being able to breathe while I walk, not being able to walk across the room, breaking plenty of chairs, you know, ruining shoes left and right because the immense amount of weight going on the shoes. And I broke toilet seats, too. So that's a little bit of the history. I also had a period of anxiety when I first moved to New York City because I had a high-stress job that I didn't know how to handle, so my vision would go black on me occasionally. It felt like the world was swaying back and forth. One night I was walking across the Brooklyn Bridge. It felt like it was falling underneath me. You know, those are the kinds of things that the anxiety caused for me. So I was pretty miserable. And then I found the rooms in 2019, and I showed up to a room in Times Square. And that night, my sponsor-to-be wasn't my sponsor that night, but he eventually would become my sponsor. He asked me, "How's all that working for you?" And I just looked up at him and laughed and said, "It isn't." You know, it really wasn't working. And then I said, "Well, you know what?" He said, "Let's start the steps." And I did it through the spiral-bound 12-step workshop book the first time, which kind of just takes a group of people through the steps together. And this was my journey. I don't know if I would suggest going into a group of other compulsive overeaters as a 12-person step workshop is my first time through the steps, but it worked for me. So, you know, and I also had a tremendous amount of willingness to do whatever it took to get out of this disease because it was driving me rampant, you know, driving me crazy. So during this workshop, I learned a couple of things. Step one, I'm powerless. I've lost the power of choice. That's what it says in the big book. And it's in italics. So I was thinking, well, I've lost the power of choice, and maybe I can become teachable. I'm willing to do anything. I was really desperate. So every day since then, I look at myself as powerless. Like, I don't control other people. And in fact, my character defects as new people get introduced to me through fellowship in my life, I learn new things about myself. Like, I'm a chronic interrupter. That was one person that taught me that. It's actually funny. My sponsee taught me that I was trying to fix people and didn't like fixing people because he turned the tables and tried to fix me. And God really tried to point out to me numerous times that I was fixing other people. I completely ignored it until my sponsee tried it with me. And then I said, wait a minute, I don't want to be fixed. And then I started realizing, oh, that's a character defect. And then, of course, I made amends around that, too, which is part of step nine. But that came about 4 years into program and really working my recovery. But step one, this powerlessness concept, you know, I can't fix people. I can't change people. The only thing I can do is change a little bit of myself, and I can change the way I react to things. I can respond. I don't need to knee-jerk react to everything around me. And that's really been useful in my job and my life, and it's really brought a lot of serenity around me. Step two is really about hope for me. I look around the rooms. I see miracles every day. I've seen people that have lost the weight. For people that are anorexic, I see them eat again. So there's a lot of, you know, miracles I see every day, and that's step two's essence to me. Step three, I don't know who God is or what God is. Today at my meeting, we actually read We Agnostics in the Big Book, and it talks about electric. And I have an engineering degree. I have no clue how electric works or how electrons are, as the Big Book says. I have no clue. I know it's there. I believe the light turns on. And I believe that the universe exists, and I'm in it, and all of us, we're all in it too. So ultimately, for me, I look at God as kind of like the universe or greater power, and I pray to it. I just say the words in my head, and I believe there is something bigger than me out there. I don't know what it is. I don't know how it works or anything, but I'm willing to make the decision to try to give up my control, because I was a control freak. I was trying to run the whole show, as the Big Book says, and that didn't work for me. And now when I give up control and I let things just go, whether I'm there or not, everything seems to work out just fine, except for now I don't have the stress. I don't have the anxiety. A lot of that has lifted, and that's the miracle of the program. The weight has also lifted because I don't need to be in charge of everything. I can step back and let things take their own course. And that, for me, is really the essence around step three. And then step four, for me, was probably one of the most important things I ever did. I've done it four times since then in 2019, which was understanding I'm a people pleaser. I have character defects. You know, step four is this inventory for me. And so what do I have? Well, I'm a people pleaser. I'm a perfectionist. I'm a chronic interrupter. I try to fix people. These are all things that were pointed out as I wrote, oh, I'm mad at this person, or I'm angry or upset at this person. And then by going through step five, giving that to my sponsor, just reading it to him, he shared his experience, strength, and hope with me and said, yeah, this here doesn't quite work, does it? Like, what might be a healthier way of coping with this? The inventory was also important for me because it reminded me that I'm lovable, that I can accept myself, that I approve of myself, that I love myself. In fact, I've been working with a new sponsor, and my apologies for being late here again. I was talking with her and she went long with me, but she's been reminding me that maybe I need to do an inventory on the word autonomy, which is the principle behind Tradition 4. Because where am I making my decisions from? Is it coming from my mother, my father? Is it what God would? Why am I not making decisions for myself? Why am I saying I should do this? Because should is really a powerful word. Why isn't it I want to do this? So I've been really working around the fourth step on this, like, where do my decisions come from also? And she also suggested in my fourth step that I print out a photo of my childhood self, who's really sad. A lot of my childhood photos are of me very sad. And just put my hand on it once a day and say, I love you and I'm here for you, Philip. And, you know, that has been so powerful because it's helped me with this concept of self-love, to where I love myself. At first, when I came into the rooms, I had no love myself. I hated myself. And then it grew into, well, other people are loving me, so there must be something here, but I don't understand it. And by working the steps, it's grown into pure self-love, where today I can look at myself in the mirror and say, I love you, Philip. In fact, I do that numerous times a day. And it really has helped build my self-esteem. Also, to where I believe I am lovable and I am capable, I do enough, I'm worthy, you know, all these powerful affirmations. As I do this, what I find are even some of my closest friends have changed to much more positive people. is where before some of my friends were some of the most negative, angry, miserable people I ever knew. So thank you so much for that. And then once I got to step 6 and 7, which is really about these character defects and I can change, instead of being perfect, I realize now there's spirituality and imperfection. I don't have to be perfect. Only God is perfect. Step 7, humility. I don't need my ego in the way anymore. And that has really helped me become more serene with the world around me. And then steps 8 and 9 are all about forgiveness and making amends. Meaning, if I tried to fix somebody before, I've actually reapproached them where possible, and I've said, I'm sorry for doing that. I don't do this anymore. And keeping it very simple, and if I can't reach out to them or whatever, I'm making my living amends by not doing it to other people. As a result, I've actually made much stronger friendships, which is something I would have never fathomed before I got in here and started working the steps. Step 10, I do it every day. I write gratitudes every day. I remind myself that I'm not in charge. I'm powerless. That's all my step 10 work. Step 11, I make a point to pray and meditate. I drop to my knees at least for 5 minutes a day to remind myself that I am powerless and God is the ultimate power. And if I'm not here, somebody else is going to do my job. So that's the ultimate form of powerlessness for me. Finally, step 12, I always agree to give service where I am able to. I am not perfect, though, and I fully admit that. But at the same time, I try to carry the message. And if there's one thing that the Big Book can be described as, is a single word, it's the word beneficial. In fact, it says, I think on 77, that the point of everything is to be of maximum service to God and those about me. And for me, I try to be of maximum service to my human potential. And I recognize today that I'm imperfect, but I'm okay with that. And I've grown into acceptance of myself and others. And it's only because I did the steps. In the tools, I work sponsorship. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. I make phone calls every day. I read the literature every day. There's a For Today reader that's really helpful for me. I always write on it every day if I can. And writing has been one of the most powerful tools for me also because it catches me on my BS and my lies myself because I love to deceive myself. But it's very hard if I write it down to really say, yeah, I agree with that. I can talk myself to believing anything, but when I write it, it's a lot harder. And the writing just comes out differently. And action plan gives me a plan for my unstructured time because I have a full-time job. I have a lot going on. But ultimately, my life has become so much more full because of the steps and the program and the fellowship. And all of the love and all of the freedom I've gained from doing this work is incredible. Is it easy? I don't think it's the easiest work I ever did, but it's certainly a lot easier than being 400. I do have weight to lose. I'm in the 260s, 270s. But ultimately, I know the weight will come off as I continue to do the work in this program. And I work it every day like my hair is on fire. And I am so grateful for my absence because it's given me a life beyond my wildest dream, as Roseanne might have said. She even wrote a book on that concept. So I'm just so grateful for the program, grateful to be here with all of you. My apologies for being late again. And I will leave my phone number here on the recording. It is 716-801-0890. And my name is Phil. I'm grateful.